Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Yes.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. Spain's Ferran Torres scored in the 106th minute of full time. They beat Argentina 1-0 to win the World Cup. Spain's defense was the story of the tournament as they allowed just one goal in the eight games that they played. Ryan Fox birdied the 72nd hole yesterday at Royal Birkdale to win the British Open at 10 under par. It's the first major championship for the 39-year-old from New Zealand. Cam Young finished second, one stroke back. World number one Scotty Scheffler was tied for fourth at 7 under par. The Cincinnati Reds slugged four home runs and beat the Colorado Rockies 9-6. Hunter Green picked up his second straight win. The Cleveland Guardians couldn't muster much offense against Paul Skeens. They lose to the Pittsburgh Pirates 7-1. This one's sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI. Visit bmifcu.org/visa.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamer is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then, it's a rundown. And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
Doing it live on a Monday edition of the program, an all friends edition today. I'm here. Joshua Perry is here. Big Mo, Eric Mosley on the other side of the glass joining you for this Monday edition of the program. And we've got some fun stuff to talk about today. 20 most interesting continues. South Florida, the Bulls. Brian Hartline, the new head coach down there. We will talk to their radio voice, Jim Lighthall, coming up at 11:30. It's Monday, so that means we'll talk a little Buckeyes with Austin Ward and JP. I got to tell you, it is good to be back in the building today. I was out for a week down in Florida, just living the best life of floating in the water and drinking quality drinks and eating good food. But 7 days of that, I am ready to return to the working world and attack this world.
Attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
We're ready to go.
All right, so let me ask you this. I know you enjoy some libations.
I do.
I do as well. So when you're doing the beach thing, are you just, you know, Coors Light, like you're a light beer guy? Do you ever mix it up with anything a little different? Like what's your go-to?
So I will tell you this. When I am on vacation, I am only drinking a beer usually if it's in the airport or if we go out to dinner.
Okay.
Or something like that. I will sit back and sip Captain and Cokes most of the week. Just chill as I'm floating in the water there. Got the Yeti.
There you go.
Full of ice, the Captain and Coke in there. Now I will switch it up a little bit. Like usually one day I will do something different. So this year we went, and it's a summer drink that I like to do a lot of times, some peach whiskey and Sprite.
Ooh.
So it gives you a little sweet, yes. Refreshing. You can do, like, I couldn't do those all week. That'd be right. Way too sweet. But for one day, we also mixed a couple transfusions in.
There you go.
While we were down there, so it was a good time.
Did you do the ready-to-drink, or did you mix them yourself?
I mixed them all myself.
Okay, good.
I'm just doing it. It's just easier that way to me. Let's just get it going. Yeah, it tastes better. Sometimes the ready to drink might not have enough octane in them.
I'm with you. They got a little aftertaste too, I feel like.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit sometimes. I could see that. So one of the things Bo talks about on this show a lot. Now, he's obviously traveling with three boys and the wife. So he has a lot in his traveling party. I have never had an awful experience with the airlines. I've never had the vacation horror story until Saturday.
Ooh.
It finally happened to me. And let me say this. The whole situation could have been a lot worse, and there were some people in the airport that definitely had it a lot worse than me on Saturday. But I was supposed to be home Saturday night. I'm a guy that likes to extend vacation, JP. Sure. I like to leave as early as possible, and I like to come home late as possible, especially on this trip where it's Saturday to Saturday. You've got Sunday, although missing my flight home on Saturday did cause me to miss work on Sunday because sure. I couldn't be here for the call-in show. Thankfully, Dave Biddle could fill in and pinch hit on short notice. So the place we're staying at, you have to check out at 10.
Right.
So we check out. But our flight, we didn't have to be over to Orlando in the airport till about 5:30-ish because our plane wasn't supposed to leave till 7:50.
Mm-hmm.
So the place we stay will let you stay and enjoy the pool. So that's what we did. We went out, we enjoyed the pool. And as I'm out at the pool, I get a notification on my phone that says your flight has been delayed.
Mm-hmm.
So 7:50 flying into Charlotte to come home to Columbus.
How long was the initial delay?
It wasn't much. It was about 15, 20 minutes.
Those are the ones that scare me the most.
Well, and I was kind of like, okay, no big deal. Be all right. But I knew the connection time was fast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we got a notification that the flight had been delayed about an hour because of maintenance on the plane. It said it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Maintenance on the plane. So the plane's schedule for the day was backed up now. Then we got a notification that said, we're rebooking your flight.
Ah.
So now I have to be at the airport just 10 minutes earlier. No big deal. But we're going to be flying to Miami and then home. Okay. We'll see how this goes. So we stay at the pool. We go get lunch. We head over to Orlando. Get a notification that the Miami flight has been delayed about 15 minutes. Okay. So then we get to the airport. And I'm going to say the name of the airline because they have done a good job for me so far. I've never had a problem with them in the past. And in this situation so far, they have treated me as well as they can. So we're flying American.
Okay.
We get to the American hub. It is a mess. See, a flight to New York has been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
See, a flight to Boston has been canceled. While we're sitting there, we see two flights that are supposed to go to Philadelphia. One of them is boarding and says they're going to take off. The other one, the pilot says, I'm not flying.
Which?
So I had two companies flying to the same spot. You would think this is a company policy, but this is what we go. Pilot says, I'm not flying. The whatever weather we're going to be flying into is too bad. So this leads to a situation, JP, where I'm looking at I'm getting on FlightAware and I'm looking to see where our plane is. So our plane is flying from Miami to Orlando. So I can see it in the air.
Right.
So our plane gets there, but it's just sitting out on the tarmac mm-hmm. because it has nowhere to go because none of these American flights are leaving their gate or taking off. And I'm starting to think, like, because I see the connection time in Miami and I'm starting to pay attention and I'm like, we're going to have a problem here because we're not going to catch this flight. And at that point, I'm looking at all my options.
Right.
And I probably should have pulled the trigger and bought a direct Southwest flight from Orlando sure. to home. Going to leave at 8:40. But I'm like, well, then I'm going to be out these flights because I'm not going to be able to get reimbursed for anything or whatnot. So I don't pull the trigger on that, but I see what's happening. And by the time our flight says it's getting a gate and it's going to go, we've missed our connection.
Mm.
So the American, I mean, they're already these lines of people to
right.
talk because there's been families that have been there since 9:30 wow. in the morning. They're trying to get to New York,
those
whatever.
Poor agents in the airport
awful.
Too. I feel and I've had to like meter myself when having conversations with them because the line's long and mm-hmm. everybody's pissed
yep.
and they're just clicking on a computer hoping something good pops up.
So I'm already being proactive. I'm in the line, but I'm on the phone as well.
Smart
so I've
guy.
Got somebody at American Airlines that I'm going to be talking to. So I'm going to get up to the guy. So I hand the phone off and We start going, and the guy's like, I tell the guy, I'm like, I am not boarding this flight to Miami if you cannot guarantee me I'm getting home tonight. I'm not going further away from home.
Right.
Plus, I'm not going to go get in the World Cup mess because
right.
they're having a World Cup game in Miami that day, the third place game. So I'm like, I'm not sitting in that mess tomorrow. So he's like, so you're not going to get on this flight? I'm like, no, I am not. So he's dealing with the other people with that flight. I'm like, that's fine. So I go over, get on the customer service. Nice older lady. But she's like, are you in? Can you fly to another airport? I'm like, what airport? She's like, I'm asking if you're willing. I'm like, ma'am, I get it. I'm willing. Just tell me what. And I'm like, if I'm flying to Dayton or Cincinnati, I need to be there tonight so right. I can drive home. And she's like, I already told you I can't get you home tonight. And I'm like, well, why would I go to another airport then tomorrow, ma'am? So finally, like, I'm trying not to lose my cool. And there was just a communication gap between sure. the two of us. So finally, I said, thank you for your help, and hung up. So then I go back to the flight boards to Miami. They're all on. So I go talk to my guy, William. William with American Airlines, great.
Shout out to William.
He's like, your original flight was maintenance. I understand that. Sorry. Here's food vouchers.
There
gives
me
a hotel.
There you go.
An Uber.
There you go.
To and from the hotel so we can get to the airport the next morning. So far, American Airlines is doing great. They've done what they can for me. I also decide I'm not dealing with American Airlines tomorrow because even the flights they have, which, by the way, we almost ended up back on the original flight to Charlotte. But there was no flights from Charlotte Sunday that had room on them. So we almost ended up on our original flight anyway and spent the night in Charlotte. But we ended up staying the night in Orlando, right near Disney. And then Sunday morning was wild as well. But I book a Southwest flight, so we're going to fly Southwest Sunday morning. So we'll pick up that story
all right.
when we come back. We'll also see, because you travel all the time.
Yeah, I got a couple.
I'm sure you have a couple stories as well. We'll see if Big Mo has some as too. Off and running, Monday edition of the program. It's Bishop and Friends on the...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Ice. I'll find something to do. I've got some money.
We're just talking about winning the lottery. That's what this whole conversation is based on.
Rothman and Ice. Weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A lot of sunshine for the morning hours with a few more clouds drifting overhead during the afternoon. There'll be some patches of haze from the wildfire smoke as well, but not as bad as what we had at the end of last week. Highs today reach the mid-80s. For tomorrow, occasional rain and thunderstorms are likely. A few of those could be strong to severe in the afternoon with highs in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Got a little breaking news in the sports world that is just coming down here in the past 5 minutes. Michigan has announced that Ward Manuel is going to step down at the end of the calendar year. They have also released the findings of its Jenner and Block investigation. I know a lot of people, JP, for a long time have asked, how has Ward Manuel kept his job with all of the things that have happened under his watch at Michigan? Well, two national championships have also happened under his watch at Michigan. That is how, but it looks like enough has come down here with the Sharon Moore situation and everything that's going on that Ward Manuel will be stepping down again at the end of the 2026 calendar year. We'll get into that a little more coming up in the next segment, because that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you guys about is sure. if anything new had happened in the Michigan. Did anything come out last week that may have led to this, or is this just this Jenner and Block, you believe, the investigation finally fully being out there?
I think all the conversation around it last week was weird. Like, you had this big, oh, Thursday is going to be the day where they have their board of trustees meeting or whatever, board of regents or whatever they call it up there, and nothing happened. But Ward Manuel did media, And he was like, I've had great conversations with university leadership and everything's fine. And I don't know where these reports are coming from. And then one of the follow-ups was so are you, if they offered you a buyout, would you take it? He's like, yeah, there are ongoing conversations. So it was like this weird, oh, this is my job and I'm not leaving. But yeah, if they offer me the buyout, I'm gone. And it seems like that's exactly what happened.
At this time, in a statement from the university, at this time, the university does not have any additional public statements planned regarding these matters, nor does the university plan to release any associated documents. We can confirm, however, that Director of Athletics Ward Manuel will step down at the end of the calendar year, and a search for a new AD will be conducted. So we will keep you up to date as the show goes on, and also talk a little bit more about this in our next segment. So, JP, we're the vacation story, the travel story. So we've missed the flight home. We're spending Saturday night in Orlando. It looked like whatever situation was going to happen with American Airlines, I was not going to get home until later tomorrow night. That was not okay with me. So I go ahead before we even leave the airport and I book a 7:30 a.m. flight on Southwest, direct to Columbus, get me in town. So American Airlines, I'm going to have to deal with. Actually, I had to deal with them yesterday because they had, it's kind of weird. They had rebooked us on another flight in Miami for late last night. And I'm like, well, I'm going to have to go to the airport late last night and get my bags because they're on a plane to Miami. So I checked and you and Reese, we were having a show, text about the show. And about that time, I was going to start digging into the show. And I was like, I just want to check and see where the bags are real quick, because on the app, you can look. And I happened to look and it said, your bags landed in Columbus at 1:40. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to run up there real quick before I get into all this for the show today. Ran up, looked, bags were right there, gave the ticket to the lady. And I was actually probably wrong. She was talking to someone and I just handed her the slips and said, hey, my bags are right there. And I just took
so
off.
I want to end it.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, I want to be done.
So I mentioned American Airlines had given us an Uber voucher for a trip to the hotel and a trip back. Well, for some reason, the Uber voucher was just for an Uber X. And that was okay, except when you're trying to book a Uber ride at 4:45 in the morning.
Yes.
Maybe that could be an issue.
Yep.
So they said all of our Uber for 45 minutes, I tried to book an Uber X and it said all of our Uber X drivers are busy and I couldn't switch it for some reason to something else. So finally it's 5:30. I'm like, our plane is boarding at 7:05. I was like, I'm okay getting there at 6, but I don't want to get there any later than that. So finally, I have to bite the bullet and pay for an Uber myself.
Sure.
Which we'll talk about with American Airlines today when we call them after work later on. So we get the Uber, we get to the airport, fly through security, everything's fast. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Well, in the Orlando airport, you've got like three different terminals, and when you go into each terminal, it has shuttles going to different ones. So we're gate 103, gates 100 to 129. The shuttle is down, so we have to go to other, and then they're going to bus us over.
Oh, God.
So, one, I've never seen an airport.
Dude, what is going on?
An airport, like, shuttle so full. Like, it was almost nervous being on that rail with so many people in there, because the cars are dropping side to side big time. So we get there. There's a huge line. I'm like, this is kind of crazy. But we're going through the line. And eventually we get to the shuttle, the bus, it takes us over, we walk right up, we even have time to get breakfast.
There you go.
Before we get on our flight, which is another issue because some people start passing the line. Like, I gotta, like, pushing through, I gotta fly it, I'm gonna miss my flight.
I don't care.
And then when I see you, sir, in line for breakfast, you better believe I'm going to say something to you.
Here's the part about
after you've been rude.
I gotta catch a flight, can I? We all have to catch a flight.
Well, yes, exactly.
The reason we're all here is because we got to catch a flight. Okay, so let's cut the BS. No.
So through all the craziness, we made the flight. We got home yesterday. We got the bags. Everything is good. Now I'm just going to have to deal with American Airlines on flight reimbursements and all of that. And like I said, they have been fantastic with me so far. So hopefully everything with that goes smooth. I know you travel all the time.
I do.
I'm sure you've got a couple stories.
I do. So the one thing I will say is the scheduled Uber is the way that I go if I know I have to get one. Like, I'm just pre-planning it the night before. I'm scheduling it for a certain time.
I should have done that.
The Uber shows up. So that would be my one piece of advice. So I've got two good ones for you. The first one, this was back in like 2018 after I retired from the NFL. The Today Show wanted to have me on to talk about the concussions and me leaving football because of that. So I'm like, cool. They booked the travel. It's me and my wife. We're dating at the time. We're heading to New York. So we're leaving CMH. And we head out west instead of east. And I'm like, that's a little bit weird. And so we have to do a big turn as we're going. We get somewhere over Pennsylvania and the pilot comes on and is like, hey, we're having a little bit of a maintenance issue while we're flying. So we're going to have to land this plane, fix the issue, and then we're going to get this plane back up in the air and get you to New York. So we land in Scranton. They go for about 45 minutes trying to figure out whatever this issue was. The pilot comes back on and says, this is the end of the line. We're canceling the rest of the flight. And I'm like, ah, this is not great. So I'm emailing some production assistant over there who probably is like, why am I getting an email on like a Sunday night? Like, I don't want to handle this. And so I don't hear back right away. And so my wife is like, what are we going to do? I'm like, we should just rent a car and we'll drive. So we're hustling to the rent-a-car counter, and they're like, we're out of cars. We cannot rent you a car right now. And I'm like, oh, crap. And she's like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, Uber, and we'll figure it out later. This couple sees us, and they're like, yeah, we've got like a mid-size SUV, and we know that you guys can't get a car. We're going to New York as well. Would you like to ride with us? My wife is like, stranger danger, absolutely not. And I'm like, this is a little bit of an older couple. We could probably take them if something goes a little bit awry. So we hop in this car with them. We get to talking. My wife played volleyball with this woman's like niece or something. So they've got a connection. It was a great ride. We get to New York. It was my wife's first time. They drive us around Times Square. It was awesome. Things went the way they needed to. But I had never been in a situation where they canceled a flight during the flight. The second one is a real quick one. This is a first world problem. Flying to Denver, flights get all screwed up. I'm sitting in first class. They rebook me into a middle seat back in economy. Me, my big ass, sitting between two strangers. I'm like, this is a real problem. And so I'm back and forth with the people, back and forth with the people. And this is where United failed me. They're like, do you want to go or do you not? And I had a timeline, and it just, that was my most recent one that perturbed me. But I've gotten into a mode of setting my expectations in hell because then I can't get that disappointed. And that's where I've gotten with the travel. I make it work. I usually travel alone for work. So it's a lot easier not having the wife there because she gets a little bit more wound up. I'm not flying with the kids anytime soon. That's just not going to happen. And so we just figure it out.
My first time with a bad airline experience, and again, it wasn't even too awful. Just it's the time, you know, and the all of that that you have to deal with, but none of it too bad. SEC Media Days, Joshua Perry getting underway today, and right as Greg Sankey is about to hit the podium, Michigan announces Ward Manuel is out. We'll let you know what we know on that coming up. 2 minutes from now, it's Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
What's up this morning is that Ward Manuel is out effective the end of the calendar year in Michigan. He will be stepping down. We got the news breaking here in the last 10 to 15 minutes. So the findings from the Jenner and Block investigation from Michigan are out. I guess not out, but they, because they're not going to release all of them for, I guess, the privacy and protection of some of the people involved in the Jenner and Blaga investigation. Just investigated, JP, the situation surrounding Sharon Moore. Mm-hmm. So I don't think this went back into Connor Stallions and Jim Harbaugh and all of that. It's just all the stuff that happened with Moore here in the last year. I think this is funny. And this is in the findings release from the University of Michigan that you can go online, look and find. It's out there for everyone. The Culture Review found that the Department of Athletics has many strengths, including a strong commitment to student-athlete success, competitive excellence, and academic achievement that includes a 96% student-athlete graduation rate. In addition, staff members spoke highly of the department's workplace culture, and 87% of employees who departed the university said they would recommend working there. At the same time, so here's the but. Culture Review identified three overreaching areas for improvement. Leadership accountability, ensuring leadership at all levels consistently follows through when misconduct is identified. Organizational structure, addressing weaknesses and investigations, human resources, compliance and oversight. Reporting culture, reducing barriers to reporting concerns and fostering an environment where employees and student athletes feel comfortable raising issues. Now, here's a question. Did the investigation or culture review find that misconduct was widespread throughout Michigan athletics? No, neither the investigation nor the culture review found that misconduct was widespread throughout the department. Your thoughts?
I mean, they could say whatever they want to say. We know that there were multiple issues within that athletic department. Part of it was people, right? Like just finding people, let alone culture, but like who you identified as leaders within that department, there were problems. You had Juwan Howard mushing people in the face, and we know Jim Harbaugh and the Rogue program that he was running there. And then obviously with Sharon Moore in the trouble that he got into. And you end it with, well, who was the guy who was there? And it was Ward Manuel. And you brought up a great point because people are like, oh, man, like, why? How could he have ever made it that far? He won two titles. And if you talk to a lot of people, and it's interesting because for a long time, Michigan would be like, Ohio State is cheater you. And then they were cheating and they're like, we want a title. I don't want to hear any of it. And we are the academic mecca of, you know, colleges. So whatever, like, we're going to do what we want to do. So they probably didn't want any more of the bad publicity that would come with releasing the actual findings. And so they're like, let's sugarcoat this as much as possible, paint a picture that there were some minor issues that needed to be adjusted, and we're going to push Ward Manuel out. And I'm sure that there was a buyout that was negotiated where he was like, I'll take my check and leave. And we're going to make it sound like this was just something that he wanted to do, a stepping down, and he wants to carve out a new path. But the reality of the situation is there were many years of things that went on within that athletic department that were fully unacceptable. Now, I wanted to address one of the things that was in the first part of that statement that bothered the hell out of me is talking about the academics. It's one thing that they love to do right now because there's not really anything else to say. They used to be on this moral high ground as Michigan men about the way that they behaved, and that's kind of gone. And so they're like, well, we're a really good school and we're committed to academics, and your guys take classes online. They don't even go on campus. Our guys are here for an education. I feel like more than half of that roster up there is in a degree path called general studies. You guys ever heard of it? General studies. You know what general studies is? Because I don't. I have no idea what they actually study.
I think it's basket weaving.
There might be some of that in there. I mean, it's an interdisciplinary coursework. So they basically just get to pick the classes that they want to take as long as they fit. In the FAQ section of this degree, can I double major with a BGS? No, you cannot pursue a second major. Can I minor with a BGS? No, you cannot minor. So I don't like, okay, yeah, you go to class in person maybe, but like, what are we even doing here? And so the whole thing to me is this unraveling of this Michigan man thing. By the way, gotten to know plenty of those guys. Some of them have become my really good friends. They're not bad guys, but this Michigan man thing, watching that kind of burn in real time has been an interesting thing to see.
It is, and you can, whenever they say that, you can just point to the last 4 or 5 years, and I know that they'll just point to national championships, sure, and a lot of times that's all we care about is winning, but you can't keep that persona. I thought this was interesting, too, JP. The Culture Review found that the football program's prominence and organizational structure created unique oversight challenges. So
what does that mean?
Our football program, because it's so prominent, it's just hard to take care of.
So it's we have such a historic program that we'll look the other way. Is that what they're saying?
It sure seems like
it. I mean, that's what it feels like. And once again, this is, you're supposed to have a structure that you build that fits the prominence of your university. So Tattoo Gate happened. Tressel resigns. The compliance department at Ohio State, like, that became such a nightmare to try to navigate because they're like, we're not going to let something like this happen again. You want to talk about oversight? We're not letting anything slip through the cracks. I'll tell this story. So when I was a sophomore in college, I had begged my dad for his car. He had a Lincoln Navigator. I wanted to drive it. He was like, cool. So I take it down. I have it on campus. I had it for 2 days. They see this car and they're calling my dad. They're like, we need a bill of sale. We need financial records. We need to know that you paid for this car because we can't get in any more trouble. Right. So they created a structure over there at the Fawcett Center that fit the prominence of the university to avoid these issues. That to me cannot be an excuse, but here we are. Here we are.
This is directly on Ward Manuel. The review found that Ward Manuel demonstrated important leadership strengths, particularly his commitment to student athletes. At the same time, it identified failures to quickly and effectively act on allegations of wrongdoing by the athletic department employees. This all goes back to me with some of this stuff. This all goes back to me that when Sharon Moore was hired, he was always the fall guy.
Sure he was.
And all of this. And you notice when everything happened, and obviously what happened with him and the lady that worked for him and how that escalated and became a thing, of course he's going to get fired. But Ward Manuel, you won some championships. You're a Michigan man. We'll let you just go on and resign. I also think it's interesting that this investigation says that, well, this wasn't widespread in the athletic department. Well, when maybe this incident here, this isolated incident that you were looking at, but when you combine that with Connor Stallions and Jim Harbaugh and, you know, even the Jim Harbaugh never faced a suspension for the Connor Stallions stuff, but he did get suspended for recruiting issues. Now, maybe that was them saying, hey, we're taking care of this here, so you don't look at this. Maybe. And oh, yeah, all of this came out because Matt Weiss was being investigated by the FBI.
Which is
so
insane.
You can't say this wasn't widespread throughout the athletic department because it's there. And all Juwan Howard, those situations. Yeah. I mean,
don't you feel like they tried to downplay so much and they didn't even acknowledge the fact that football is your program. That's what you are known for. And everybody else is paying attention to everything that's going on. And Michigan just tried to play it off like, look, we've got this under control. And now you've gotten to this point right here where Ward Manuel is, let's just face it, he's being forced to leave.
Yes.
So it's like they couldn't run away from the fact that this was coming. And I think there's more. Doesn't Connor Stallions have a lawsuit he's bringing up against Michigan? So there's going to be more.
This according to Pete Thamel, has this from Michigan's interim president, Domenico Grasso. The outside review raised serious concerns and called findings unacceptable in failures in accountability, structural deficiencies, weakness in our reporting, support systems, and concerns about retaliation. So if you're going to make a statement like that, that sounds pretty bad to me. Why is this man allowed to lead your athletic department for the next 6 months?
Oh, he's a Michigan man. And the other part too, and that was the thing last week where I was like, I don't know if they're actually going to do it. July is a terrible time to be parting ways with an athletic director. It's a terrible time to do a search. It's a terrible time to feel like you don't have somebody permanent leading your athletic department. And so it always felt like it would have been rough for them to want to do it. I think the Michigan man part of it, they're like, let's save face a little bit for him. I know this, but it's a real thing. Like, you could throw your head back all you want to. Like, this is, and to add on to this, by the way, so we talked about basketball, we talked about football. Michigan hockey also had a lot of issues with its culture, right? Mm. So like, this was another layer of it too, where it's just not your big money making sports. Like, there were other rogue actors just floating around here for years, and the same guy was allowed to lead the athletic department.
Let me ask you guys this real quick. How much do you think the success that Ohio State has played into everything that Michigan has done and the decisions they've made just because they've been trying to keep up with what Ohio State's doing?
I don't think there's any doubt. Like, Urban Meyer broke Jim Harbaugh, yeah, I believe. Well, yeah.
That had to be a rough, what was that, from 2016 to 2020, basically 2021 before that had to be just a rough time for him.
How amazing is this that Heather Dinich is on the TV right now with a big SEC logo behind her from SEC Media Days, and they are talking about the Ward Manuel situation. Amanda Kristovich, friend of the program, just put out a tweet. That's why I was throwing my head back when you were talking, JP. We'll get into that next. It's Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Common Man and Timmy are inviting select jabronis to the station for pizza. Hey, that could be you. Email goodcleanboy@gmail.com and tell us why you should be chosen.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
If you're just joining us, Ward Manuel is out at Michigan at the end of the calendar year. The findings from the Jenner and Block third-party investigation into the Sharon Moore situation has been given to Michigan, and Ward Manuel has deemed it was time to step down. So Amanda Kristovich, we have her on this program often to talk about things, usually in the business aspect of sports. She already has an article out at Front Office Sports on this Michigan situation. Ward Manuel told the president that he was stepping down. And this is from the University of Michigan president. I have the deepest respect for Ward and his countless contributions to Michigan, and I have asked him to stay on. Meaning Ward Manuel is stepping down right now, it sounds like, and the president asked him to remain. She also goes on to add, in addition to Manuel staying until the end of the year, Michigan has appointed him to be a special advisor to the president to implement recommendations to improve the athletic department he oversaw. So this guy, let this happen, and you're going to have him be involved in the solution.
Sure. Why not? Why not?
That's the only thing that makes sense, Michigan being Michigan.
It's a perfect ending to the way that this thing has gone. The guy who couldn't do right. You know, and I'll say this. Let me flip this. This might not be the worst idea ever, right? I like listening to stories of people who can't get right because I know to do all the things that they have done, I do the opposite. So maybe they're going to be like, hey, Ward, what do you think about this? And he'll give his answer and they'll be like, all right, let's do the opposite thing here. This is the easiest way to fix it, is just ask him what his opinion is and then go the other direction. That is absolutely nuts to me. And you read one of the statements that was out there about the idea of people maybe fearing retaliation within that athletic department, that might be the worst indictment out of anything that was here. That student athletes, that coaches, that administrators feared speaking up because they didn't know what was going to happen after that. That, I mean, to me, it's the worst way to run any type of organization when your people feel like they don't have a voice. But here we are. Here we are.
That is just amazing.
It is.
I feel like he must have like explicit pictures of Bo Schembechler, and so they don't want anything to come out. How does somebody stay? And then, you know, he has the exit. He has the exit.
Sure.
And they're like, well, no, we're not sure we want you to exit. We just don't want you to be AD. It's the most Michigan thing to do.
So I will say this, not as a defense, but as maybe trying to make some sense of this, is their university president right now is an interim president. And if you have followed any of both Michigan and Michigan State university drama, their boards of regents, boards of trustees are a mess right now. And so I think in a lot of these situations, they're probably like, well, who's the next most prominent person? It's the athletic director. And so just from a stability standpoint, they're probably like, we need you to do this, whether we want you to do it or not. Like, we can't have that vacated while also having an interim university president and a board of regents that can't get right. So the whole thing is a mess is what I'm trying to say. And they're probably like, well, it's a mess right now anyway. You might as well just stay on until we can find somebody to permanently unmess this thing.
I am someone who has always said, I think all these programs have something. I think if you look into every program, somebody is breaking the rules or doing something they're not supposed to. I've always maintained that. So just don't have the squeaky wheel that gets people to start looking into you. This all seems different, though.
Yeah.
This whole Michigan thing is on a different level. This isn't just some recruiting violations here and maybe somebody got in trouble over here that we were able to grease the skids with and take care of it. This is even something different than Georgia driving 100 miles an hour all over the damn state.
Right.
I mean,
they had a little bit of everything here.
And the fact that this investigation, and I understand this investigation was just into supposedly the Sharon Moore situation, but the fact that you can say it was not widespread in our athletic department after all of the things, recruiting violations with Jim Harbaugh, the Connor Stallions situation, Matt Weiss and the FBI getting involved, one of the basketball players wrecking a car that was in Ward Manuel's wife's name. Well, like all of these things, we're very satisfactory in a lot of things. Actually, we're better than satisfactory. We're exemplary. And this isn't widespread. This is just delusional.
So let me ask this question. If they would have gotten rid of Ward Manuel a couple years ago, is there a chance that they have Jim Harbaugh and Dusty May still? Like, it felt like the Harbaugh thing at the end got real nasty because he and Ward could not figure it out. Just from a relationship standpoint, they couldn't figure a contract out. He felt maybe a little bit betrayed by how Ward handled, maybe didn't have his back fully, which he shouldn't have. And then you have Dusty, which I have a hunch, and I can't verify this, and he'll say, oh, NIL is tough and portal's tough and it's hard to sustain. I have a feeling that he was waiting for this investigation and this outcome before he wanted to make a decision and then got to a point where he just had to. But if Ward was gone, I think he might still be around.
I think he's this whole situation seems to me like there's just nowhere else they could turn. And they've backed themselves into such a corner that they can't go anywhere else. It's not like anybody from the outside will want to even come here and try to fix it because it's such a mess and there's so many layers. It feels like there's going to be more and more and more. Are they going to get the big hammer dropped on them? Maybe not. But it does feel like there's going to always be another layer to it. And I think Dusty May, I agree with you, JP. I think that he saw what was coming and was like, this is the perfect time for me to get out.
I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop in the Dusty May thing, like some kind of an investigation or violation into the Michigan basketball program here. Just maybe because of everything that's going on, or maybe that's just the cynic in me. The Jim Harbaugh thing is interesting because maybe if Ward Manuel did get let go, maybe he would have stayed. But I think Ward Manuel kind of didn't want him there.
I don't think he did either.
Jim Harbaugh has always kind of had a shelf life, and where he, like, San Diego is...
Yeah, he wears on people.
They're always happy for what he did for the program, but they were glad he moved on. I think the same with Stanford.
No doubt.
Probably the same with the San Francisco 49ers. He just kind of rubs people the wrong way. So I think Ward was probably not only ready to be done dealing with Jim Harbaugh, but also maybe probably ready to be done dealing with all of this.
They slow played Jim on the contract, if we remember back to that time. And it was basically like he had made his decision that he was going to go. And then they're like, oh, we'll pay you whatever you want to stay. Like he definitely kind of alienated him. And listen, I'm not saying it was the wrong decision to do that, because you got a guy running a rogue program. Like, you got to make decisions for yourself at some point. But it's just interesting to me, because I think if it wasn't for Ward, they would still have two coaches, maybe still have two coaches that won titles that both left right after they won.
More Ward Manuel discussion as the program goes on. We will blitz the weekend next. It's Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Was out at Michigan as Michigan's athletic director. The school announced that Manuel will step down at the end of the calendar year. This comes on the heels of a third-party investigation into Sharon Moore released their findings. Spain's Ferran Torres scored a goal in the 106th minute of full time. They knock off Argentina 1-0 to win the World Cup. Spain's defense, the story of the tournament, they allowed just one goal in the eight games. Ryan Fox birdied the 72nd hole yesterday at Royal Birkdale to win the British Open at 10 under par. It's his first major championship at 39 years old. The Cincinnati Reds beat the Colorado Rockies 9-6. The Cleveland Guardians lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates 7-1. This one's sponsored by Germain Toyota for unbeatable sales and service. Visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road, or you can find them online at germaintoyota.net.
The uncle you never knew you had.
The friends you kind of wish you didn't.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Breaking news this morning out of Ann Arbor. Ward Manuel will step down at the end of the calendar year as Michigan's athletic director. The third-party investigation into Sharon Moore and the situation for him being ousted as head football coach at Michigan. The findings for that have been released to the university. So Ward Manuel will be out, stepping down at the end of the year. Second hour of the program on this Monday. Ryan Baker, Joshua Perry, Big Mo, Eric Mosley with you today, trying to keep you up on the Ward Manuel situation. We will continue to do that as more news comes out throughout the program. But right now, it's time to blitz the weekend.
Bishop and Friends present a weekend sports blitz.
Sponsored by Metal Supermarkets. Visit metalsupermarkets.com/Columbus for all your metal needs.
JP, we will start with you. I believe I had that. What did you have this weekend?
That it would be a good weekend for casual sports consumption. We had the big golf going on. It's nice wallpaper to have as you're putzing around the house. You had World Cup action, which, Bake, you're going to be disappointed in me.
Did you break down?
I had some people over yesterday, and they wanted to watch the game. So it was on the big TV in the living room. So I might have glanced over a few times just to see what was going on.
I'm not disappointed in you. That happens. And I will say this. While I was enjoying some libations in the Orlando airport on Saturday afternoon, the third place game was going on between France and England. And it seemed like everybody where I was at was into that. So it was on the TVs. Sometimes it's just unavoidable. Like, I wasn't trying to avoid it. I just wasn't searching it out. So I'm not disappointed in you, JP.
Well, I had a little bit of that going on. Some W action, too, which has been really intriguing to watch. Caitlin Clark had a phenomenal, one-of-a-kind performance. I think it was 45 points and 10 assists. So good casual viewing weekend is what I had.
I didn't get a ton of chances to watch a lot of sports, but most of it was the British Open. I'm a huge PGA nut, and especially yesterday, seeing that leaderboard change as much as it did during the day, and you really, by about halfway through, you really had no idea who was going to come through and win it. So that was worthwhile for me. I did catch a little bit of the World Cup, and I was really rooting for Argentina just because they were the underdog, but not surprised that Spain won. But look at this World Cup. It was just an amazing experience to see how it came together. There was a lot of surprises. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and even after USA got knocked out, I had fun with it. But my weekend was basically golf, watching, and I had grandchildren's birthday party, and that was about it.
I believe I had that Axel Lindenborg would be the steal of the NBA draft, especially landing with the Golden State Warriors. And I know it's just the Summer League, but he was named the MVP of the Summer League. Golden State won that this year. And I'm still surprised. I'm still shocked. And I understand fit with Cooper Flagg. Maybe it was. I can't believe Dusty May went with Morris Johnson, who's really good as well. But I can't believe he drafted Morris Johnson over Axel Lindenborg. Axel Lindenborg, I believe, will be a starter for Golden State, and he'll be really good for them this year. Mm-hmm. And that's scary to me because they still have Steph Curry, and they're still the Golden State Warriors. I know they're not as good as they used to, but Axel Lindenborg is a dude.
I'm with you on that.
What did you not have, JP?
Well, to circle back to what we've been talking about for the last two segments, I did not have the timing of this Ward Manuel news coupled with the idea that he will stay on to the end of the year and be an advisor over the reshaping of this rogue athletic department. But I will say this, I'm never surprised anymore, only disappointed.
I did not have Ryan Fox winning the British Open. Honestly, he had had a good tournament, but you're looking at the names that were out there, and he was not one. Even as it got closer to the end in that final round, he just was not one I thought would stick around. I really felt like, Scheffler was making a run. I thought he might have a chance. It just was not where I thought it would go. But, you know, congrats to Ryan Fox and able to get the New Zealander his first major.
JP, I'm going to go the similar way of you. And I did not have Ward Manuel being out as the athletic director. And he's not totally out because, as you mentioned, they're going to make him an advisor to the president and whatnot. But I honestly thought those two national championships would get him through anything. I thought they were going to have a couple of years of the football team struggling and then the basketball team maybe not making the right hire here after Dusty May. So I thought Ward Manuel was going to be the athletic director for Michigan for another couple years.
It felt like all of the momentum and all of their chatter was, well, we won a couple of championships, so we're going to do whatever we want. I'm a little bit shocked, too.
Who's the player that impressed you guys?
All right, so I'm going to go a little bit off the wall here. Josh Kerr, who is a runner from Britain, broke the mile record with a time of 3 minutes and 42.66 seconds. His pace was ridiculous. Like, I don't know if anybody watched that video, if you watch it live or watch the videos on social media, but the guy was basically running like 54, 55 pace 400 meters during this. I think it said 16 miles an hour. I'm not sure how these guys get it done. I'm not a runner like that. So certainly impressed me.
I did see that video. That was really impressive. Mine was based off of a video I saw on ESPN. I was just looking through the weekend and everybody that I didn't get to see. And Brandon Young, a pitcher for the Orioles, if you get a chance to see this video, he hacky sacks a ball up the middle to himself and makes the play. And that was the best play that I had seen all weekend. My runner-up would be, just because I'm a Cleveland fan, Travis Bazzano with the game-winning home run on Friday night.
Players that impressed me the most were the catchers in the Reds-Rockies game yesterday. Hunter Goodman, the catcher for Colorado, and Tyler Stevenson, the catcher for the Reds, they combined to go 6-for-8 in yesterday's game with 5 home runs, 5 runs scored, and 8 RBIs driven in. Goodman hit 3. Tyler Stevenson hit 2, and his one out was a fly ball to the wall in center field. That has to be pretty close to like an all-time catcher game. Player that disappointed.
So this is a little bit weird here, but the watching Cam Scataboo get up there and lift up his pant leg and then do a backflip where he absolutely did not stick the landing. Like, there's something about being that dumb to me that is so bothersome. And I get it. Like, his whole shtick is that he's a meathead and he just runs through guys and concussions don't matter. I'm here for a good time, not a long time. That was just, it's a ridiculous thing to do. And if I'm the Giants, I'm kind of like, okay, we have money invested in this guy and he's an idiot. And I wouldn't feel great about that.
Yeah, maybe you just keep him to goal line runs and that's it. I couldn't pick one player. It's a whole team. Argentina. You have to kick the ball at the goal. And they just played scared to me. Now, obviously, you go down a man late in the game. There's not much you can do there. But for as much as they had just hung around in most games, I felt like against Spain, they were just scared stiff, and they were playing not to lose and not playing to win. So that was the whole team disappointed me.
To me, it was Sam Burns. Sam Burns was right there to win the PGA Championship. He's right there yesterday, leading, going into the final round of the Open Championship. All he had to do was shoot even par yesterday, and he would have been in a playoff. Instead, he shoots 2 over par. Sam Burns is a young guy that's knocking at the door, but he's had a chance here in the last 2 and just couldn't quite get it done. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week.
All right, so Luis de la Fuente, the Spain coach, feels like the obvious choice here. I wasn't super dialed into the World Cup, but I did have it on, as I mentioned. And watching one of the things I love the most in sports is anytime there are trophies being presented, when you bring out the stage onto the field, when there's confetti falling, things of that nature, I love watching it. And so to be able to coach a group of guys, to be able to pull that off, you got to win it for me.
I had De La Fuente as well. And my reason is not just because they won, but they were the favorites throughout. And sometimes it's such a long tournament to keep your guys that focused as you go on, and it does get tougher and tougher. You've got to have some mettle as a coach, and he definitely showed they really didn't struggle much at all, and they faced every comer that they had to go against. So I think definitely he's the coach of the week.
You know, it seems like for a couple years, people have been shoveling dirt on Larry Johnson's grave.
Mm, yes.
But he just continues to do what he does. Gets Carlos May, 4-star defensive line recruit out of Alabama, to commit this week. He has gotten 4 of the top 100 recruits on the defensive line to commit to the Buckeyes for next year, including the number one edge in DJ Jacobs. My guy, Coach Johnson, still out there getting it done. Speaking of Ohio State football, we are about 2 weeks away from training camp getting started in early August. We're going to get JP's thoughts on a position group or two that he's excited to see once camp gets going underway for the Buckeyes this year. It's Bishop and Friends on The Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service, because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800.
Common Man and Timmy are putting together a hangout at the radio station for a small amount of listeners. Pizza will be involved. Ping pong, too. Lots of inappropriate conversation. And don't forget, pin the tail on Teddy. Tell Man and Timmy why you're the perfect guest by emailing goodcleanboy@gmail.com.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The event takes place Thursday, July 30th, and all email submissions must be in by July 27th. Enter today. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A lot of sunshine for the morning hours with a few more clouds drifting overhead during the afternoon. There'll be some patches of haze from the wildfire smoke as well, but not as bad as what we had at the end of last week. Highs today reach the mid-80s. For tomorrow, occasional rain and thunderstorms are likely. Few of those could be strong to severe in the afternoon with highs in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
The news of the day coming out of Michigan that Ward Manuel will be stepping down as athletic director at the end of the calendar year. This coming on the heels of Jenner and Block, the third-party company that was investigating the Sharon Moore situation.
$11 million, by the way, they spent on that.
I saw $12 million.
There you go.
But regardless, that's a lot of money for when we're looking for every dollar, every penny, every cent we can in pro sports now.
By the way, everything was out there. Like, I'm not sure how. How much of the $12 million they really needed to spend to figure out that there were some problems up there?
It seemed, well, it was so isolated, JP. It wasn't widely spread throughout the athletic department.
I would have taken $12 million to tell them how bad it was.
Yeah, I'd have taken way less than that. Hey, yeah, you guys want to figure out your problems? Yeah, I'll look over those papers there.
We're also getting some good nuggets coming out of the SEC media days that have started. I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot of those tomorrow and as the week goes on. During the program, but you just mentioned something in the break, Eli Drinkwitz saying that a lot of the coaches already regretting 9 games. They haven't even done it yet.
Haven't even played one. They're regretting them. And it's funny, all the bitching and moaning that these coaches do down there. It's supposed to be the best football conference in America, and they're scared to play one more conference game. I mean, what are we talking about here? I get it. You're going to tote an extra L throughout the conference. It's not going to be great. It's probably not going to help your playoff resumes, but if your teams are that good, what's having another Arkansas on the schedule? You know, what's having another Mississippi State game? You guys can play that. You'll be fine.
Well, the problem is their 4-8 teams are a lot better than everybody else's 4-8 teams.
That's right.
So it's a lot more difficult. One thing we know is difficult is the Ohio State football schedule this year. It's a lot of people have it as the number one. I believe I was looking in Phil Steele's magazine. He has the Buckeyes schedule as the sixth toughest for this year. Buckeye training camp coming up here. First week of August, our show's going to be out there. Morning Juice, T-Bone, and Tyvus will all be out there, so that will be fun on those Thursdays and Friday. And JP, I was looking ahead for the Buckeyes this year. Off the offensive side of the ball seems kind of set, and we kind of know there may be a piece here or there, or a depth guy, you know, rotational guy. The biggest change, it seems like, is on the defense this year. And I was just thinking about this in position groups that interest me for Ohio State. And that can even be a position group that we know. But what's a position group or two as we head towards training camp that you're really excited to see on this Buckeye football team?
Well, I'll give you one on offense and one on defense. And I think the one that I'm excited to see offensively is the offensive line, of course. And the way that they ended last year, well documented, wasn't up to standard. But they've got a lot of guys returning, and they have heard all offseason about how they were not up to standard. And I feel like in the Woody, when players are doubted, when coaches are doubted, they know how to materialize that into motivation. I think being veteran is one of the most important attributes in a collegiate offensive line. It's a hard position to identify players, and it's hard to get them up to speed. So the idea that they have veteran players, I think, is a big bonus. But once again, chip on your shoulder. You know, and I think at a place like Ohio State, sometimes it's difficult to create that chip because everybody's patting you on the back. You're usually pretty good. One of the top teams year in and year out, right? Like there's not a lot to really be upset about, to be fired up about. And they've had a whole offseason of listening to people say, well, you know, that group was a big question mark at the end of the year. How much are they actually going to improve?
That always seemed like something that Urban Meyer was the best at.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why a lot of people didn't like him, and it definitely didn't work at the NFL, but he seemed like a guy that could get you guys to always have that chip on your shoulder and always be competing.
Did you, and I think there was, I can't remember who it was, but Urban basically made up these fake quotes from one of the national football analysts and had plastered them into people's lockers. So guys were all pissed off. And then whoever it was like doing a game, and dudes like really didn't want to talk to him. It's like, what's going on? He's like, oh, you said this. It was like, I never said that. Like Urban would go as far as to make up things so guys could get motivated. And the reality of the situation is sometimes you have to do that at Ohio State because there's not a lot to nitpick. All of this is real for these guys. Like they're battling people really saying things about them that they disagree with, and they have an opportunity to prove all those people wrong.
I think one thing on the offensive line is interesting to me is who is the fifth guy going to be? I'm a guy who has been a big supporter of Josh Padilla, and I know he's had injuries that have kept him off the field, but he's a guy that I thought when he was in there at right guard last year when they put him in, he seemed to make a difference and solidify that offensive line in the second half of the Miami game. He's a guy I'm really hoping to see get a shot in there. I know Ian Moore also came in that game, and a lot of people are excited about him, and maybe that boots Philip Daniels out of the rotation, mm-hmm. or maybe it moves Austin Sarveld to that right guard spot. But that fifth spot on the offensive line is going to be interesting. What's your one on the defensive side of the ball?
So for me, it's really the defensive line. I'm a big believer in things start up front. In particular, right, you got a linebacker group that's going to be a little bit green, so you want that to be a clear picture for those guys. I think the secondary is going to be pretty good. But once again, like replacing Caleb Downs, I think there's probably going to be a bit of a learning curve for those guys too. And I look at the players up front, and in particular, Kenyatta has an opportunity here, and I feel like there's a level still that needs to click for him. You know, like he's a big, good-looking athlete. We have seen some of those flash plays, got a lot of power to his game, but I think there's another level where he can be a guy who can take over games, and I'd love to see that. You've got a few transfers that are going to factor into this up front and probably make an impact, and so I want to see how those guys fit in. You know, what about a Zion Grady or mm-hmm. an Edrick Houston, Will Smith Jr., guys that have been around the program now for a few years? How do they factor in? I think that there will be good depth up there. I think that some of the new faces certainly are going to make an impact. But to me, for that defense, I think they have to be great up front early so everything else can fall into line for them.
So, and I understand your the talk about the defensive line. I guess I just have enough faith in those guys and James Smith and Quay Rousseau coming in. I think that defensive line is going to be okay.
I think so too.
The position that interests me the most on the defensive side of the ball is linebacker, because you have Peyton Pierce, who played a lot last year.
Mm-hmm.
You have a Christian Allegro who's come in, and they're talking about maybe even using him as an edge rusher a little bit from that linebacker spot. Sincere Johnson, I know he's a true freshman, but he's a guy I saw in high school, and he's a dude that is a big, strong kid, that Glenville pipeline. And then you also see a guy like Garrett Stover, who was right. an Iron Buckeye and looked like a totally different human from last year to this year and the work he put in the weight room. And Riley Pettijohn. And I have faith in the guy that's coaching and bringing
too.
Those guys in. And I'm so excited to see how that linebacker room transitions from two top 10 picks in the NFL draft to what we see on the field this year.
No, I mean, I feel really good about the personnel there. To your point, James Laurinaitis, and every time I come on the radio, I feel like I say nice things about him, and he deserves it, knows how to communicate, knows how to teach, which is really important, especially when you've got a group of guys who maybe don't have the experience that you had last year. That's going to be important. So it's not a question of, do I think they'll be fine? Like, I think they will. It's just a question of how quickly, and to me, the better the D-line plays early on, the easier it becomes for that group. And that's why I'm excited to see the D-line.
We'll ask Austin Ward's thoughts on this and the Ward Manuel situation up on Michigan as he is stepping down as the athletic director at the end of the calendar year. Austin Ward in 2 minutes is Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
Sponsored by Wright Pack Credit Union.
And he joins us on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline every Monday morning at 10:30. And it seems like almost every Monday morning now, Austin, we're getting something dropping that we can talk to you about as we get the news that Ward Manuel will be stepping down as the athletic director of Michigan at the end of the calendar year. Just your initial thoughts on everything coming out this morning.
Gosh, just absolutely shocked, Bake. I mean, who could have ever seen this coming last week when he was defending himself publicly and accepting interviews with every national outlet or radio station that would have him on in the midst of, I don't know, the Wall Street Journal, legal investigations, lawsuits, everything piling up. You know, the bill was coming due. We've talked about this several times that, you know, Ward Manuel's tenure at Michigan did produce some trophies, and he very much embraced the charge it to winning mantra by crossing lines and in some cases appearing to break laws, not just rules. So at some point, the bill was going to come due. Clearly, they were in the midst of all that. You don't have the level of reporting, national, locally, otherwise, that was going on around Ward Manuel's future if there's not actual smoke to that fire. I think it was probably long overdue. Some of the stuff that was happening with Sherrone Moore specifically had been public knowledge in the college football industry for basically a year at this point, maybe even longer than that. So it needed to happen. It feels like he's probably getting a more graceful exit than he deserves, in my opinion, but that's not all that surprising given the way that athletic department and that university has handled its business recently.
I mean, what do you make of that exit? Because we were talking about it, and that might be one of the most ridiculous things that we've seen. You have this athletic director who clearly was a part of the issue. Some of the issues were laid out this morning, and they're like, yeah, but we'll keep you around to the end of the year and also make you a special advisor on fixing the issues that you were a part of.
Well, that's the part, JP, that makes no sense to me. If this person could fix the culture, he probably could have kept his job and done that. He's the one that appeared to be responsible. I can't say it wouldn't probably be fair to say he's the one that broke it, but he certainly, you know, coaches say it all the time. You've heard this probably a million times, JP. You get what you emphasize. And following compliance laws, rules, regulations, that never seemed to be a hallmark of his leadership there. Not from the outside. I don't cover that program, but that's certainly the perception that was left by many, not just people that are were curious about what was happening in Columbus there. So I don't understand that. I don't think that there are many places that would fly, and I think that that's probably more representative of an overall sort of culture rot that has happened for a program that has tried to claim moral superiority in college athletics for decades, and it's becoming more clear with every single day that is not the way business is handled in Ann Arbor.
What did you think, Austin, of the part of Michigan's released statement that says that this was not a athletic department wide problem? This was just a small, isolated situation.
Yeah, I think my laughter probably tells you how I feel about it. I mean, it's not just like it happened in one sport. It's not like it just happened with one coach. I think we all know and have all seen that. I don't even think that that conversation, based on what some of the discussion is with the basketball program and Dusty May's exit, that all of this is, you know, done with basketball, which, by the way, already had issues under Ward Manuel's leadership several years ago. So when you're talking about hockey, when you're talking about men's basketball, when you're talking about repeated violations in football, I mean, that to me is just a laughable PR spin that doesn't hold up to any kind of scrutiny whatsoever.
All right, let's flip it over to talking about Ohio State. We've got training camp starting up here pretty shortly, and we were having the conversation earlier about the position groups that we're most excited to see. So if you had to pick one of any of the position groups that you're excited to watch, which would it be?
I'm really excited just to get out there, JP, on day one and see if there is any change to that day one starting lineup and rotation. And by that, I think you all know that I'm talking about if Austin Cervelde starts camp at right guard and Ian Moore begins camp at left tackle. I don't think that, you know, I know that there's a perception. I don't fully agree with it. And you know, you and I could, or all of us can debate it, and we have for the last 7 months. I think that the level of blame that has been passed on the offensive line is overblown. Based on those last two games, did they not, you know, they could have played better, of course, but I don't think that they were even remotely solely to blame for what happened in those losses. But all that's to say, even if that's true, they still have to, you're going to go try and win a national championship and survive this schedule. Your offensive line, and not just your starters, but also your depth, is going to be routinely and repeatedly tested. So, you know, it's tough, you know, for what we get to see in those first few days and the non-padded practices. You know, we won't get to see a ton of one-on-one opportunities against Kenyatta Jackson or Edric Houston for those offensive linemen. So it won't be a scenario where, you know, I couldn't evaluate it anyway, if I'm being honest. Like, that's not, I'm never going to be one of those X's and O's gurus and can get a feel for that, you know, the way you could. But just the way that they line up, if they start that camp, you know, with that move already in the works, I think that would tell you that there are a lot of encouraging signs about what Ian Moore has done in the OTAs over the last couple of months. And he had a dude of the week selection a couple of weeks ago that also suggests that might be the way this goes. So I think we have to start there with that offensive line. And I'm also excited to see it, not just because of that uncertainty, but also because I think it's going to be really good.
You talk about that spot on the offensive line that it seems like is up for grabs. Do you think there's going to be a position battle where we get a surprise winner or starter, or maybe a position where we already think we have one guy penciled in, but he ends up not being the guy?
I think that could potentially happen at defensive end, Bake. But I don't know that anyone has any confidence about who they would pencil in next to Kenyatta Jackson. You know, Bo Atkinson, you know, has a pretty extensive background now with a year at Ohio State and the North Carolina experience before that. And he's also coming off of one of those coveted Dude of the Week honors. I thought he had an awesome spring. I know there are people that are, you know, skeptical of Ohio State relying on Bo Atkinson based on what he did a year ago. I looked at that more of a transitionary year. And I think Ohio State for the most part did too. I don't know that inside the Woody, it had off the charts expectations for making that move over from North Carolina and becoming an immediate starter, especially on a team that had Caden Curry back. But, you know, it doesn't have to just be Bo Atkinson anyway. I don't know that, like, most people I'm expecting him to be a starter or a regular in the rotation, but you could also make strong cases for Quay Rousseau. You could make a strong case that Christian Allegro is going to be a key feature of that, standing up and rushing the passer. You've got Zion Grady and Epi Satanale in here too. For one guy to emerge as the top guy opposite Kenyatta Jackson, I think that there could be a surprise in the works there. And honestly, even if that is Bo Atkinson, I think that would surprise some people. So I think you got to watch that position, because the same thing that I said about the offensive line is just as true on the defensive line. If they're going to win a national championship, you've got to be able to control the line of scrimmage.
Looking at the wide receiver room, obviously the single best player in college football is Jeremiah Smith. But then you start to dig a little bit deeper after that, and maybe there are more depth questions than we've seen in the past. How are you feeling about the wide receiver depth this year?
Yeah, I'm going to answer it both ways, JP. I think there's more playable depth than they've had in quite some time. And I think we're going to probably see something that is more closely resembling 2018 or 2019, not just in terms of playing five or six wide receivers, but also in terms of scheme. At least that's the way it looked in spring camp and the way the conversation has gone this summer. Now, the reason that some of that dissipated over the last couple of years is they had nothing but first round picks on top of the depth chart. And when you have Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, or when you have Emeka Ebuka with Jeremiah Smith, or when you have Jaxon Smith-Njigba or Chris Olave, I'll go through the whole list. You get the point. When you have those guys at the top, it's hard to talk yourself into ever taking them off the field. And so that's not, I don't say that to slight what Kyle Parker or Devin McEwen or Chris Henry Jr. or Brock Boyd, Philip Bell, Desi Jones, what any of those guys could do. I don't think that they are first round draft picks like Carnell Tate right now. They can certainly go out and prove that wrong, but you know, the fact that they are not clear cut at the top, like no doubt about it, first round draft picks, they were brought in, I think, much of those guys, not Chris Henry Jr., but for their positional versatility. McEwen specifically was an upgrade in terms of speed and explosiveness, which I think was, you know, for what you had in Carnell and JJ a year ago, they didn't have one of those Paris Campbell types that are going to a threat to take a pop pass and go 75 yards. So, you know, some of this I think is going to look different, and it's going to have maybe some more specialized roles than we've seen in a couple of years. And I don't look at that as a negative. I think that can be a real positive for this wide receiver group as a whole.
Austin, when can people hear you on these fine airwaves this week?
You've got a chance to hear me and Beamer tonight and tomorrow on the Buckeye Show. I will be in Tuesday and Wednesday morning on Morning Juice, filling in for Bobby on that program. We've got we're about to record the live show at Roosters in about 10 minutes. So you can get that on 97.1 The Fan's YouTube channel, 10TV, 10TV Plus. And, you know, we'll probably sprinkle in some soccer tonight just to make up for the fact that you guys missed the biggest sporting event in the world on Sunday.
JP said he had it on at his house because he had people over. So I don't know how much he was watching, but he had it on. Austin, always thank you so much for your time on a Monday morning, and we will catch you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you.
Austin Ward joins us via the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. You heard him talking about it there, The Beat with Austin and Berm, the Roosters live show, and of course a regular contributor to the Buckeye Show at 6 p.m. here on The Fan. We'll do a little thing or not a thing next. It's Bishop and Friends on the
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Football fall camp is coming. Will Julian Sayin take his game to the next level? Will Matt Patricia's defense dominate again? Join us live for training camp fun starting Thursday, August 6th. Your home of the Buckeyes. Woo! The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Federal Elite Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
Ryan Baker, Joshua Perry, Big Mo, Eric Mosley here with you on a Monday All Friends edition of the program. Time for Thing or Not a Thing.
Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So, JP, you mentioned this a little bit in the weekend blitz, but New York Giants running back Cam Scataboo has said he's perfectly fine after failing to land a backflip and appearing to land awkwardly on his surgically repaired right ankle. This happened at an appearance at Fanatics Fest this past weekend. The video shows him attempting to do the backflip, and he falls to the ground while trying to land. Scataboo said he's good following the fall and promised not to hurt myself before the season. He blamed the botched flip on the bouncy floors. He was seen doing this at a celebrity softball game on May 3rd. New Giants coach John Harbaugh joked last month that he told Scataboo no backflips at minicamp, And of course, he his rookie season was cut short when he that tibia fracture and right ankle dislocation. It was a nasty injury against the Eagles. Thing or not a thing?
Here's the thing about it. The bouncy floors.
Right? That should help you, right?
That's what we're getting to. The fact that you had to be told, hey, don't do that. You know, in John Harbaugh seems like a guy who probably isn't going to put up with a lot more of the weird things that happen. So I'm curious to see all of that. And you throw Jackson Dart in the mix and he plays a reckless brand of quarterbacking. I think the guy is a little bit too much of a meathead, and that can be a problem.
It's definitely a thing, and I say it mainly because he says he is perfectly fine. No, you're not. You are not perfectly fine because you keep doing this kind of stuff. And, you know, what's going to happen next is we saw him get into a pushing, shoving match at a WWE match. He's going to end up in the ring there. He's going to be somewhere diving off of a cliff and doing the backflip. This guy just absolutely has no regard for his body, which you love in a football player, but you hate it when he's in his personal life. So I definitely think it's a thing.
I think this is a thing, and I think it goes to, you mentioned it a little bit, Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo, they just seem like they would fit with Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions right now, and you know, John Dorsey and his vision of football guy. They seem like that. I feel like this Cam Scataboo Jackson Dart thing is going to be really, really good or really, really bad, and there's going to be no in between. I feel like there's no gray area with this. These guys are just, you know, football meatheads. It seems like tough dudes. Let's go. I don't care if I hurt myself type deal. And I think this is only one, like, John Harbaugh helps with this, I believe, and maybe can control it a little bit. But this seems like an all or nothing thing with this combo.
I don't know if it's controllable. And that's the scary part about it, even with a guy like John Harbaugh.
So Shohei Ohtani, he's not going to be participating in Tuesday's Major League All-Star Game, but he had a trading card that went for big money this past weekend. According to Fanatics Collect, the most expensive publicly known Ohtani card before this weekend sold. It's a Bowman Chrome Superfractor one-of-one rookie card. It has a 9.5 rating on Beckett. It sold for $3.365 million. They said even versions of this card that are just normal versions, they sell for around $2,000. This broke the previous record of an Ohtani card that sold in December 2025. That was a one-of-a-kind Topps autographed gold MLB logo man patch card. It sold for $3 million, so this topped it by about $365,000. Thing or not a thing?
This is a thing. It's a crazy thing to me because, number one, like, there was a point where people couldn't sell their trading cards, it felt like, for anything. Right, like, they just had these books of cards that were sitting in their basement or their garage, and they were just holding on to them, hoping one day they might be able to flip it for a little bit of money. And now we've got some of these cards that are going like this. But the other part of the thing, I was listening to a financial call-in show, and there was a guy who had an Ohtani rookie card that he was holding on to, and he was in dire financial straits. And he was like, yeah, but I've got this card that's worth $250,000 that would change my life tomorrow if I sold it. And it's crazy to think about how these cards are a lottery ticket for some people. That is absolutely insane to me.
It is a thing because it's an investment opportunity. And my hat's off to whoever owned it. Good for you. I had tons of baseball cards growing up, complete packs. Wish I could find my Andre Dawson signed card, which I have somewhere, but I think it's definitely a thing. It's a great way to not only have nostalgia, but you hold on to this stuff, you can make a little bit of money.
You also forgot how our dad's JP had that card in a box of cards in the garage that his mom threw out.
Right.
So she just threw them all out, and he could have made all this money off of them. I was a big card collector as a kid, and I never had any card that would have been super expensive. I think the best one I ever had was a Frank Thomas rookie card. But I don't even think like it ever got over $100. Cards like went away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden COVID happened and cards came back in full force. I always wonder, like the guy you said, who, what are you keeping it for? So, like, do you want it to get to $1 million? And like, who decides that, and how fickle is that?
It's gambling, basically. It's like commodities, though. And he said the only reason he would want to hold on to it was because he thinks it's going to go up in value. And I'm all here for that. That's perfectly fine. It's a bit of a gamble. You can do that if you have money. This guy called into the show and was like, I think I might have to declare bankruptcy. Oh, by the way, I have $250,000 in my pocket right now. I just won't sell the card yet. Crazy.
Yeah, that's just dumb.
it's awful. I could not imagine ever paying an exorbitant amount of money for a card, because who says what the value is? And so, that could drop all in the... It's so interesting.
I think part of it is the cachet for these guys to say that they can buy them. I think part of it is the attachment. And for some guys, they're just serial collectors of things. Jim Irsay. He collected a whole bunch of things. He had this ridiculous collection of things when he died. And some people just love to collect things.
Sure do. And, you know, good for you if you have the $3.365 million to spend on a Shohei Ohtani rookie card. 20 most interesting takes us to South Florida. The Bulls, Brian Hartline. What's their outlook for the season coming up? We get into that next. It's Bishop and Friends on the...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. Michigan announced this morning that Athletic Director Ward Manuel will be stepping down at the end of the calendar year. This comes on the heels of a third-party investigation into Sharon Moore released their findings. The university also said that Manuel will become a special advisor to the university president. Spain won the World Cup. Ferran Torres scored in the 106th minute of full time. They beat Argentina 1-0. Their defense was brilliant through the 8 games of the tournament as they allowed just one goal. Ryan Fox won the British Open yesterday, shooting 10 under par, bordering the final hole. It's the first major championship for the 39-year-old from New Zealand. The Reds beat the Rockies 9-6. The Guardians fall to the Pirates 7-1. This one's sponsored by Ramos Roofing. Request your free roof or exterior assessment today at RamosRoofingOhio.com. Ramos Roofing, reliable, local, and built right.
The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Final hour of the program on a Monday. It's an all-friends edition of the program. I'm Ryan Baker. He is Joshua Perry. Big Mo, Eric Mosley on the other side of the glass. The big news of the morning this morning, Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel will be stepping down at the end of the year. It sounds like from all of the reporting, he was going to just step down and be out as athletic director, but interim president Grasso asked him to stay on through the end of the year. And then this mess that's happened under Ward Manuel's watch, he's going to become a special advisor and try to help clean it up.
Of course. Why not? Just finish the job right. You know, that's where we're at with this whole thing.
We've also got SEC Media Days going on this morning. Greg Sankey with some comments saying the talks of the SEC breaking off on their own are real, that SEC games averaged 80,000 fans last year, the most in the history of any sports league. And we've also got coaches complaining about 9 games they haven't even played yet in conference.
So the whole, is it real that you guys are thinking about breaking off? Why would they ever say it's not? Like, if their whole goal is to break off, they tell the truth, yeah, we're going to do it. And if their whole goal is to bluff, then they're going to be like, yeah, we're going to do it. Like, I feel like that's, I get why people have to ask those questions, but I don't know what answer you're necessarily looking for when you ask that.
I guess you just want to hear something, but you're right. You lose all your leverage if you say, oh, no, we're not doing that or whatnot. So it's very interesting. Big Ten Media Days will get underway next week. They're July 20th. 28th through the 30th over in Chicago, SEC Media Days down in Tampa. Media Days happening means that we are getting closer to the season, and that means we get into our 20 most interesting programs. Today, it's the South Florida Bulls.
Conferences will expand the playoffs, but will never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
And I think this one is pretty explanatory, JP, why South Florida are on our 20 most interesting programs. And they are interesting to us because their head coach is now a Buckeye. Former wide receivers coach and offensive coordinator here at Ohio State, Brian Hartline, is headed to South Florida to become the head coach of the Bulls this year. And I think this is so, I think this is a perfect spot for Coach Hartline, and I don't know if it's going to work right away because you've had a ton of transition here with this team. You lose 33 players to the transfer portal. You bring 44 in through the transfer portal. So there's obviously going to be a lot of turnover here.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing we know about Brian Hartline is he can recruit wide receivers. Yeah. Now, can he recruit or can he find the right coaches to recruit players at other positions? Well, Brian Hartline's a cool cat. He's someone that these kids can relate to. This guy played in the National Football League. He wears the nice clothes. He's in shape. He drives the nice cars. And he knows about relationships. I think this is a great spot for Brian Hartline.
I mean, this used to be the path, right? Like, you were a rising star of a coach, and you would get a job at a group of five school where you felt like you could build a program and you could win and you could shine before you got the major job. Anymore, it feels like guys are becoming celebrity coordinators or celebrity coaches, and so they're getting the big job right away. So I think from the standpoint of being able to cut your teeth a little bit in a place where people aren't going to be hyper-focused on some of the early mistakes you're likely to make, and some of the ugly moments that you have as a young coach who's doing the job for the first time, I like it. And the other thing I really like is the idea that even the guys who are maybe 3 stars, the guys who are maybe underrated down in the state of Florida, bunch of good ones. And if you're the developer that we saw here at Ohio State when it came to wide receivers, if you can do that across your football team, you start to build something that's a little bit dangerous. One of those group of five teams that the big boys don't want to schedule. I think that he certainly can accomplish that down there at South Florida.
He's replacing Alex Golish, who has Central Ohio ties.
Yeah,
he
Dublin guy.
Went to Dublin Scioto. He coached at Westerville Central. Then he became a grad coach at Ohio State. He has a great year with South Florida last year as they go 9-4, 6-2 in the American Athletic Conference. He heads to Auburn, and unfortunately for South Florida, he took a lot of the roster with him.
Let me get that quarterback.
And Corden Bowen Byram, Brown, the quarterback, who I'm going to be paying attention to Auburn this year because of Golish and the Central Ohio ties, but I also think Brown is a heck of a player.
He is a toolsy guy. I like his movement skill. He's got a big arm. A little bit of a funny throwing motion, but he knows how to operate that offense. So Golish is a guy, not to make this an Auburn thing, but, you know, he was there with Heupel, and he knows about that quick tempo offense. We want to run as many plays as we possibly can. And so from that standpoint, I think they lost a player who's got really good skill there. Certainly went to the portal. Michael Van Buren's the guy that they brought in, who was a, you know, pretty highly touted recruit. So there's some talent there. But it's hard when you're a new coach and ultimately you got to hitch your wagon to a quarterback. And you can't do it with a guy who's maybe been there and he's got the ear of the locker room anymore because of the portal. As you're taking this job and you're closing out your other job, you got to go out there and find your guy at the same time, too. That is a difficult task.
It was funny when Hartline goes to South Florida, you think, oh, is he going to go all these Buckeyes? And you think quarterback right away. You thought maybe he'd take Lincoln Keenholz with him. Some people, and even I kind of thought, Aaron Nolan might be a guy that could end up with him at South Florida. He ends up with Van Buren, who was highly recruited to LSU, then moved on to Mississippi State. He does have a couple Buckeyes that he did take with him, one of them being Bryson Rogers, the other C.J. Hicks. C.J. Hicks is a guy that we always heard was going to be next, and it just didn't seem to click for him at Ohio State, whether that be from being bounced around between linebacker, D-end, a jack position, as we heard back when Jim Knowles was here. Maybe he can go to South Florida and untap that potential. I really liked Bryson Rogers when I saw him on the field here. Him going with Hartline, he'll probably be their number one guy this year, and he's got a burst.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's good to have a guy who can set the tone. Like, that was in your individual meeting room every day, that can kind of be the voice in the locker room of like, these are the expectations. Listen, when he gets in this kind of mood, just be ready for these types of things. I think that's important. And then to your point about C.J. Hicks, like, I think he was in no man's land a little bit positionally. And then when you're bouncing around like that, I think it's difficult to develop the mental side of the game because you're trying to take so many different things in. And if he can be in a spot where his expectation as a player is to go out and make plays, like, we will put a defense out there that's favorable to your skill set because we know what you can be at your top end. I think that's where he can thrive.
They don't have the schedule that they did last year. If you remember correctly, last year, right off the rip, I think it was three top 25 teams. They beat Florida, which Florida ended up being a 4-8 team, but at the time they were ranked highly. They lost to Miami, played Miami. That was really maybe the only game they weren't super competitive in. They played Army. They played some tough teams. They do have Army this year. They've got Bowling Green on the schedule. But the schedule is more favorable for the Bulls this year. So if Hartline, he's brought some talented guys in, if he can get those guys to work together, the schedule is there and favorable for them to have another type season like they did last year.
I tend to agree with that. UTSA is supposed to be one of the top group of five teams this year, so certainly that'll be a tough one. Tulane in Memphis as well will probably be the game.
Speaking of Aaron Nolan, Memphis.
Yes, that they'll circle, but you start to look at the rest of it, to your point, like, they can build some momentum through this schedule, particularly the early parts. Like, Army's going to be a tough one early on, but they can start to build some momentum otherwise.
The recruiting class ranked 90th according to 24/7 Sports. Their transfer portal rating, though, 58th. They did, again, mention bringing 44 players out of the portal. That combined ranking is 82nd. You'd have to think giving Hartline a full offseason, though, with USF, that'll go up here in the years to come. We will hit the categories with South Florida next. It's Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
It's a secret radio station. It's called The Fan, too. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan, too, is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A lot of sunshine for the morning hours with a few more clouds drifting overhead during the afternoon. There'll be some patches of haze from the wildfire smoke as well, but not as bad as what we had at the end of last week. Highs today reach the mid-80s. For tomorrow, occasional rain and thunderstorms are likely. Few of those could be strong to severe in the afternoon with highs in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The best hair on the air. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
20 most interesting. We hit the categories for the South Florida Bulls. The Golden Bram March is the fight song for the South Florida Bulls. Brian Hartline in his first year as head coach down at South Florida. We hit the categories and we started 20 most interesting last week when I was out of town. So this is my first time seeing some of the new categories, although they're still kind of similar. The College Football 2026 adaptable grade. What is the grade that the USF Bulls have done in NIL and Portaling?
All right. So I think it's I got to grade this on a curve because we're year one with Brian Hartline. The one thing that I do know is that they want to become a portal destination for some of the guys who are maybe getting pushed out of their current bigger Power 5, Power 4 programs. And then in terms of resources, I think they're ready to spend. I think they want to spend. So kind of putting that on a curve, I would say a B minus. Like, I think they know where they fit. They know what the infrastructure is. I'm just not sure their ability to get it done quite yet.
I think that I'm right in that B range. I'm going to trend towards a B plus, and a lot of the same reasons. They're getting ready to build a brand new stadium. Yep. So there's a lot of things. They've really committed to putting money into this program. I think that's going to help them, not just with new facilities, but the transfer portal, bringing in players. And they want to give Hartline the best chance possible, knowing the kind of recruiter he is. So I think they've put it in place. But until we actually see it happen, we can't give him an A.
I think I'm leaning B minus here. I wanted to go probably more C, but you mentioned it there, Big Mo, with the fact that they are building a new stadium. They want to get involved with this, and I think they're going to give Brian Hartline as much resources as they can. But the problem is, I think they're just a step behind in Florida, the bigger schools in Florida, and that also includes UCF, who at one time was probably their rival, but I feel like UCF has a little more money, so they're going to be just ahead of South Florida. We mentioned they brought in 44 guys out of the portal. Now, some of that is necessity because 33 left, and a lot of them are going to be playing for Auburn next year with their former coach, Alex Golish. But they did bring in some guys. We mentioned C.J. Hicks, Bryson Rogers, Michael Van Buren. They brought in some guys with some high pedigree. So now it's Brian Hartline's job to put that together on the field. Uniform and brand grade.
Do I just come out and be a hater right now? I like the colors. I hate the uniform. I'm giving it an F. The gold helmet, I'm here for. I like the Bull logo. I cannot stand the way the jerseys look. I don't like it with the South Florida spelled out on the front. I don't like the font of the number. I don't like some of the alternate uniform combinations. It just, I'm giving it an F. That's where I'm at.
Okay, so I have to go higher than you, JP. I'm a big fan of the green and white and the gold. I like all that. I do think I would put it at a C because if I'm looking at the uniform and the brand, I don't think there's a brand yet.
Right.
There's just not a brand. Uniform, I think the gold helmets will always pop. And I think that is something that they can work behind. But can't give it above a C just because there is no brand.
So I love the little design of the bull on the side of the helmet. I don't love the gold. I actually think just their white and green looks better, but they're not great. The colors aren't great here. And as you mentioned, I don't know how much of a brand they have. I think the brand is starting to come with Alex Golish and if Brian Hartline can have some success in recruiting. So I think the brand's on the way. I can't go F but I think I'm going a D here for South Florida. Historical player that you would pick for this USF team.
All right, so I had to do a little research here. Jason Pierre-Paul played at South Florida.
When he had all 10 digits.
That is correct. Feels like a guy that you would want to be able to drop into your locker room, kind of be a tone setter. You know, CJ Hicks, maybe they could be a bookend kind of deal there, but that's the kind of player that can, in some of those games where you might have questions, knock out a quarterback, and then next thing you know, you're feeling pretty good.
So I'm going with another first-round pick, Mike Jenkins. He was a defensive back, so not Mike Jenkins from Ohio State.
No.
Was a defensive back and drafted in the first round by the Cowboys. It wasn't too bad, but it's hard with this team. There's not a ton of players that really stood out to me, but that's where I'm going.
So it's interesting for the reasons that you guys just talked about. This made this easy for me. I would take the quarterback that just left him, and that's Byron Brown. I would take Byron Brown, give him Brian Hartline offense and a Brian Hartline with some of the receivers that he's going to bring in and how he'll coach these receivers. Give me the quarterback, and the best quarterback I think in their history is probably the guy that was just there and left for Auburn. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard?
So I've never seen Friday Night Lights. Maybe that's a faux pas here. So I had to do a little research on this. Dual threat guy, maybe wasn't as highly ranked, but apparently out-dueled a very highly ranked quarterback. Like, depends on what point we're talking here. But yeah, I mean, I think this might have been the kind of guy where you like push as hard as you can to get him on campus and then see what happens from there.
I think Vince Howard fits the mold of what Brian Hartline wants. I think the thought that you could run the ball a little bit, but also play action, throw it deep. You know that Hartline's probably going to be developing some wide receivers. So I think he definitely visits.
I think this is probably about a B-, and it's only this high because Brian Hartline, I believe, is such a good recruiter, and I think Brian Hartline would be able to get him there. Also, who doesn't want to live in South Florida? Sure. Well, me and you, JP, maybe not, because it's a little hot for us.
No, a lot of people want to be there.
They have air conditioning.
They do. So this would probably be like a C- or D+, but the Brian Hartline factor, I think, is big, so I will give it a B-. Sliding door moment for this USF program.
So this is it's a tough one. This is a program that's only been around since 97, right? So like I've been around longer than this program. It feels like right now might be it, right? They're pushing for the building the new stadium on campus, which is huge. I think they realize that if they can generate some NIL and they can become maybe a portal destination for players that can elevate their profile. And they've had legitimate talks about trying to rise to the Power Four. I'm not sure who would want to take them. I'm not sure how much they want to do it just based off of the way that people are talking. Like, it's going to be a little bit difficult. But this, to me, feels like it might be the moment for them as opposed to a period in the past.
I think I go just before that. Alex Golish, what he did there to put them a little bit more on the national spectrum. The fact that there's people out there, different pundits and whatnot, talking about, is South Florida one of those teams that might be able to get into a Power Five eventually? I think that started with Golish. I don't think that the talk is really at a fever pitch, but I think Hartline's able to maybe take it to that next level. So I think just the end of last season would have been that sliding door moment.
JP, I'm with you. I think the sliding door moment for this USF program is these next 2 years. Alex Golish started something here. Can Brian Hartline continue that at least, or possibly take it to the next level? So I think the sliding door moment for this program is this year and next year and how this start. Because 2 years ago, Brian Hartline wasn't leaving Ohio State for South Florida. So Alex Golish, you mentioned, he did start something here. I think it's these next 2 years with Brian Hartline, because if Brian Hartline does continue this, In 2 years, he's probably gone.
Yeah.
And he'll be the next head coach at Florida State or, you know, South Carolina or somewhere right. else. Brian Hartline will be moving on. So these next 2 years, I think, are super critical with, as you mentioned, Eric, can they jump into a Power Four program and be one of these teams that's really on the rise? We'll get some more insight into the South Florida program. The radio voice of the Bulls, Jim Lighthall, joins us in 2 minutes. It's Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
After putting up with Tom Tiberi for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Ryan Baker, Joshua Perry here with you. We head out now to the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline and bring in the radio voice of the South Florida Bulls, Jim Lighthall. Jim, thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, South Florida this year is interesting to us up here in Columbus, Ohio, because one of our own, Brian Hartline, is down there as the head coach now at South Florida. What has the excitement been like around Brian Hartline for everybody down there?
Well, first of all, guys, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time, as always, to talk about South Florida football. We're super excited about Brian Hartline. Obviously, there's high expectations coming into this season. And, you know, 3 years ago, I couldn't say that at all. There was no expectations for football until Alex Golish got here and kind of turned the program around. And Brian Hartline, I think, saw this as an attractive opportunity to become a head coach for the first time. And, you know, everybody here is expecting 6, 7, 8, 9 wins in his first season. I know it's a lot of pressure with 65 new guys on your roster, but that's the way it works now in college football these days.
What are some of the biggest things that Brian Hartline has come in and tried to change or tried to make an impact immediately with the program?
Well, I think obviously at the defensive end, it's going to be huge for them. You know, he's an offensive guy, but the defense was the problem for this school for the last 3 years. The first year under Golish, they were in the bottom 5 in the country defensively, then moved up to maybe the bottom 15. And then last year, they were about middle of the pack. But still, when you're scoring 40, 45 points a game and you're giving up 35 points a game, that's still a problem. So he brought in Josh Aldridge, who was the defensive coordinator at East Carolina, really good there, turned people over at a very high rate. And I think maybe more than anything, that might be what's exciting for this program is to get some stops, which we didn't do for the last 3 years. Now, on the other hand, I don't think he's going to bring in this high-octane offense that Golish had either, and you get kind of spoiled rolling up 500, 600 yards of offense every single time. But listen, I don't think anybody really cares how you get there. Just get us to 9 wins or 10 wins.
You talked about you couldn't say that 3 years ago with the South Florida football program, and you mentioned Alex Golish, another guy with Central Ohio ties who has moved on to Auburn. What was Alex Golish able to do at South Florida that other people couldn't get done?
Well, first of all, let me say this. There were no expectations because this football program was irrelevant. And to me, you can be bad year after year, but you can't be irrelevant. And that's exactly what this program had turned into. I know we're a young school. This is only the 30th year of football, but we had a very, very good tradition here. A lot of wins, a lot of big wins over big schools. But this program fell into the point where it was, you know, not relevant anymore. So what Alex Golish did is, number one, he came in here and he took a look at the strength and conditioning setup and said, they're not tough enough. They're not strong enough. They're not fast enough, which means they can't compete at any level. We were losing to FCS teams at one point with USF. So Golish did that. He changed the culture. And I think Brian Hartline, with Brian Hartline, you get proof of purchase. I mean, he's going to show receipts of getting guys to the NFL, getting his team to the college football playoff. That's all you have to show these kids is I can get you to the level that you want to be at.
So when you look around the roster, and you mentioned the defense needing to improve, but what would be some of the biggest questions roster-wise as they come into the season?
Well, I think defensive back was huge, because in the American guys, we are seeing every single Saturday, we're seeing four wide receivers, five wide receivers, spread offenses. There's not much in the running attack outside of Army and Navy. Everybody's throwing the ball all over the yard. And the defensive backfield was just getting shredded. I mean, they couldn't stop anybody. And honestly, you guys know this, it kind of starts up front. If you're not getting pressure up front, it puts so much pressure on the backside of your defense. And they weren't getting any sacks. They haven't gotten any sacks for the last 3 years. Now, I will say this, they turned people over at a very high rate last year and the year before that. So you get some of those turnovers, you get short fields, and with that offense, they were able to score rather easily. But if you faced a team that didn't turn the ball over, and now all of a sudden they're throwing the ball, or you face a Navy team that's going to run it 60, 65, 70 times at you, and you don't have big bodies up front, Hartline has brought in those transfers. He's brought in big defensive tackles to clog the middle to stop Army and Navy, and then he's brought in an entirely new defensive backfield to shut down the rest of the league.
Speaking with South Florida, the radio voice of the Bulls, Jim Lighthall on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Jim, the team you're going to be calling this year is going to look vastly different from the team you had last year, as 33 guys left in the transfer portal, 44 guys came in. Of the new guys that you've kind of seen throughout spring ball and maybe a little bit into the summer, who is a guy or two that's kind of caught your eye and attention?
Well, obviously, we'll start at the quarterback position. It's the most important position. We lost a really good one in Byron Brown, but Michael Van Buren has started games at LSU. He's going to fight with Luke Cromenhawk, who has started games at Florida State and also Mississippi State. I think Van Buren will go into the fall as the leader there. I like both of these guys. Van Buren is a little bit more mobile, but Cromenhawk really looks good coming off the bus with that quarterback size. Those two. I like Bryson Rogers, a guy that you guys are very familiar with. It came from Ohio State. He was a big-time prospect when he came out of Tampa, a four-star kid. They really need some help at the wide receiver position. Him and Armand Branch from Purdue are two guys that came in here as transfers. And I think up front on the offensive side, Michael Wooten from Arizona, and Caleb Cook is a name that they really like on the offensive line. He was at Georgia Southern. He was an all-league player. And they've got to rebuild three of those spots on the offensive line. The offensive line was really good last year. They kept Byron Brown upright. They ran the football very well. So they're having to replace those guys. And then on the defensive side, up front, another Ohio State guy, C.J. Hicks, a former five-star guy. And listen, I don't know a lot about C.J. Hicks. I can read his press clippings. I can read his bio. I don't know if he just didn't get the opportunity at Ohio State, or he's stuck behind guys that are just better than him, or can C.J. Hicks just not play? I mean, we'll find out all that stuff this year. He's going to be a guy that they're counting on. And then Asante Redwood is a big defensive tackle out of West Virginia that they really like.
Are there any guys who stuck around that are going to be major contributors for this team, or is it going to be basically, you know, recruits and transfers this year?
No, that's a good question. And there's a few guys that are still around. One of those is on the offensive line. Thomas Schrader is a preseason all-conference pick. There's a running back by the name of Alvon Isaac. This is a kid out of Gainesville that really wanted to play at Florida. Florida wasn't very interested in him. And then he made huge plays in the game in the swamp last year to beat them, and kind of had them rethinking their recruiting strategy. But he's back as a running back. Also, there's a wide receiver by the name of Media Rubin. This guy is a former wide receiver at Stanford, really came on in the last half of the year last year. Big body, fast, breaks tackles. So they have some guys. There's not a lot on the defensive side. There's only one starter back on the defensive side, so it's going to be mostly transfers, and I'm sure some freshmen are going to get some shots as well.
You mentioned the game against Florida last year. The schedule for USF was pretty tough last season, maybe a little easier this year. What is a realistic expectation for this South Florida team this upcoming season?
Yeah, let me say this right away. Going back for 30 years, this school has played anyone, anywhere. Didn't matter. They kind of subscribed to that Bobby Bowden strategy in the late 70s. We've gone to Alabama, you know, Florida State, Auburn, Notre Dame, all these places, and won at all these places, Florida. So they have a really good tradition in scheduling, playing tough non-conference opponents. Now, we were supposed to play Alabama this year, and they backed out. BYU was also supposed to be on the schedule this year, and they backed out. So that's why this schedule, the non-conference, looks the way it does. Guys, it never, ever looks like this for South Florida. So now when you're looking at Florida International, Delaware State, Bowling Green, Kent State, everybody's going to say, oh, they don't play anybody. If they get into the college football playoff, it's because they didn't play anybody. Oh, heck, they almost beat Alabama the last two times they played them. And Alabama wanted to put this off as long as they can. So I think when you look at the non-conference schedule and you say they should be 4-0, without a doubt there. And then in the American, a lot of that depends on who you do not play. And they don't play Navy this year, which is nice. Navy's going to be a heavyweight in the league. I got to think they're going to win 8 or 9 games this year, which first-year head coach, that's a pretty good start. Now, what scares me is what if Brian Hartline comes in here and goes 11-1 or 12-0? I think there's going to be other schools that are calling him right away.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be it's a blessing and the curse of having a guy who can really coach at a place like that. But there is conversation, people talking about potentially moving up to Power Four. I know that's a goal. There's a new stadium that's coming. I know the finances are all getting aligned in the same direction. Again, you hired a coach that you want to elevate your program. Where are things at in terms of conversations about moving up to the Power Four?
Well, you know, when you're in March Madness and the bubble watch is there and it's the first four out, USF is sitting at the top of the first four out. Whenever there's an opening, they're going to call South Florida, whether that's in the ACC or the Big 12. I can't imagine the Big 10 or the SEC is going to call them anytime soon. But what's great about this school is that the president, the board of trustees, the athletic director, and the coaches are all completely in line. We're not in the P4 right now, but we're going to act like it, meaning we're going to schedule like that. We're going to pay like that for coaches, and we're going to pay players like that. So this school has said, even though we're not there yet, we want to be an attractive candidate when that time comes. Another reason why they're building a football stadium, which will open next year against Louisville, by the way. But when you start paying players and bringing in high names and the NIL money is there, you're taken very seriously by the other leagues, and the teams in your league complain about it because right now South Florida outspends everybody. Memphis is a close second. Memphis outspends them in basketball, but if you want to be a player, you got to spend the money, and that's what this school's doing.
Jim, I know one thing for sure. People in Central Ohio this year are going to have an eye on South Florida just to see how Brian Hartline does in his first year as head coach. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time here today talking about the Bulls.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Anytime you need me, thank you.
Radio play-by-play voice of the South Florida Bulls, Jim Lighthall, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. And you hear him there talk about the things they're doing. They want to be in a position to be one of those Power Four schools. That's why I think that sliding door moment we talked about are these next couple of years with Brian Hartline.
Totally agree. I mean, the opportunity is sitting right there. Talent-rich state. They got the money flowing the right way. They picked a really good head coach. Should be a really good head coach. I'm excited to see what they do.
We'll wrap up the program and do a little three things coming up next. It's Bishop and Friends on the
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Common Man and Timmy are inviting select jabronis to the station for pizza. Hey, that could be you. Email goodcleanboy@gmail.com and tell us why you should be chosen.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
The Daily Fan Poll today, sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. Man, a JT's Pizza actually sounds good right now. Will the ACC still exist in 10 years? 69.4% of the votes saying no, 30.6% saying yes.
I'm sure the name will exist, like the Pac-12. Now, the conference as we know it, I'm not so sure about that.
I think the conference will still exist. I think not. I think a lot of the conferences, except for maybe the Big Ten and the SEC, will look different. I hope somewhere along the lines here we get a reverse course in football. And I actually hope football breaks off on its own. But I hope we go back to a more regionality of this.
Like, I agree.
These are the 64 teams we're going to have that can play for the main national college football. And we go back to the regionality of everything where I don't know what the number is. Say you have 15 in each conference or whatever, and you play 9 games within your pod, 1 game from another pod, and then you can play 2 cupcake warm-up type games. But I miss the regionality.
I do too. If we could take it back to the early 2000s and just have conferences that look like that, I'd be perfectly fine.
I think Ryan Baker is going to be the next commissioner, the first commissioner of college football.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
1, 2, 3 things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
First thing for me, I saw this yesterday. Rachel Robinson, the widow of Jackie Robinson, turned 104 years old yesterday. Wow. And she continues to be an inspiration for people. She founded the Jackie Robinson Foundation. She continues to do what she can for that, even at an advanced age. JP, I'm not sure I could imagine living to 74 at this point, let alone 104. That's pretty amazing.
I always say 80 is my number. 104 is it's a little bit up there, but it's a beautiful thing, obviously. Legacy, impact, and then being able to see the way the world has changed in some of the ways that they were fighting early on for, I think is beautiful there. All right, my first thing, we had a fish fry yesterday at the house. It was phenomenal.
I forgot to ask how it was.
Dude, so we went up to Lake Erie last week, and we went walleye fishing, brought them home. It was fantastic. We had, obviously, the fried fish. I had 3 fryers going. We had French fries. I made hush puppies. We had coleslaw. It was a phenomenal day. And summer is perfect for that kind of gathering right there. I love it.
My first thing is actually something that was really upsetting to me yesterday. So you ever plan your meal, like maybe dinner is the meal that I'm going to cook something. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, I had this recipe that I was looking forward to. I was working here in the morning, left here, went home, got everything ready. It was like a teriyaki chicken casserole. I was all excited about. Got it done. Put it up on the stove after I take it out of the oven. And waiting for it to cool down, my wife and I are sitting in our recliners watching TV, and then I just hear this explosion.
Oh, it broke.
Apparently, I didn't turn off a burner.
Ugh.
And the whole casserole dish and the whole casserole just... Now, luckily, no one was in there, so that would have been tragic. But I don't let many things bother me or, you know, anything that I can't control bother me. I was so, so mad. So that was... That was not the way I wanted to end my day yesterday.
I get it.
Second thing for me, and you just talked about a fish fry, being down on the beach for a whole week, like the seafood is just different. And I don't know. I don't know if it's fresh. I don't know if I believe that because I think you can get fresh seafood
Did
anywhere.
Did you hear T-Bone and Titus
in the world
talking about
now?
This?
I heard him talking about that. Now you can't catch it here in Ohio and throw it right on the. But I still think they can be fresh enough. I think it just has to be in the way they cook it, and the things they have to cook it. They're just more used to it. They're ready for it. But it's just so different. Like, I enjoy lobster. I think it's a lot of work for it. And I know I didn't have to work much for this, but we went to a place down there. I got a lobster roll, It was absolutely delicious. Yeah. It was just different. I don't think you can get that here in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, no. I mean, probably not, but I'm still slamming sushi rolls like it's fresh right out of the water. All right, my second thing, I love telling stories about the children. So James is on Monsters, Inc. right now. It's his new favorite thing. So he goes around saying, rawr, to everybody all the time, to the point where his 11-month-old sister is now like, rah. So I took James to Costco on Saturday, and we're sitting there. He wanted a slice of pizza, so we're eating it in the concession area. And he looks over at this older woman and starts growling at her. And she was so sweet. Shout out to her. She's like, oh, are you a lion? And he's like, no, I'm a monster. Rawr. And she's like, oh my God, you're so scary. And so I had to thank this woman on the way out. But this kid thinks he's a monster and also does not understand stranger danger right now. So we got some work to do.
So Saturday was my, let's see, I have 7 grandchildren. And it was one of the middle ones. He turned 4. So 3 of my grandsons were there. And when I got there, they were out playing on the trampoline. And they still look at me like I can do a lot of things. I had to try to explain to them why Pops can't get on the trampoline. Because even though at 50 I feel spry, I am not. And it was just fun watching them do that. But it was also funny having to explain to them that, you know, Pops can chase you around, but I'm not climbing up on a trampoline anytime soon. But it's awesome to see them grow up and do their thing, and I had a great time with it.
Real quickly for me, final thing, golf majors are over for the year. I understand, not one to deal with football. I feel like this is a bad move because I'm not interested in golf the rest of the year.
I'll probably put it on his wallpaper, but I tend to agree. My last thing, that air quality, that was real. I was out there mowing yesterday, thought I was going to pass out, and it wasn't even that hot.
In Ohio, you can't breathe and you can't eat lettuce. My third thing is our next show coming up is Rothman and Ice, and they've got some fun stuff going on. They're going to do The Floor Is Yours, taking calls. You can possibly get a Skyline gift card. 10 TV's Adam King at 1:30, and at 2:30, Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN.
That'll do it for us. Make sure you stay tuned to Rothman and Ice. Big Mo, thank you for filling in. Me, JP, and Reese is back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends, 9 to noon on The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FIRST.